Welcome, everyone. You've reached Average Advice.
This is Tim.
And I'm Zar. This podcast is just two best mates discussing the challenges of life and using our past experiences to give questionable advice on how to adequately succeed.
Join us as we discuss a new topic weekly and travel through the challenges that we've faced growing up as a millennial and give our expert advice on navigating the harsh world of adulthood.
We'll tell stories, we'll exchange banter, and we'll relive our past mistakes so you don't have to.
So please subscribe.
Subscribe.
And enjoy the show.
Welcome back, everyone. You know where you're at. It's Average Advice.
Average Advice, back for another week.
And we're here again. It's Tim and it's Zar, and we've got our third
special
guest.
Our friend Matt.
Hello, Matt, aka Moose, aka Shoey, the shoe master.
Now, we do have to come
master
clean.
Master of shoes.
Not going to lie. This is getting a little bit of deja vu from this episode.
We did a recording last week and Tim's computer was completely full
on
of memory.
The last episode. You know how the first episode we said that we are very average and we are noobs at this. So for the first time out of 30 episodes, we couldn't record.
Yep.
Hour and 17 minutes we wasted. So
Tim's computer completely shat itself and the data was corrupted and we couldn't recover it. And we're like, I guess we're doing another episode next week.
So I've spent the last week trying to forget everything we spoke about.
Second time lucky, boys. Yeah. Here we go.
Anyway, we're here with Shuey. How you doing, man? Welcome to the show for second time, but all the viewers are only here at the first time, so...
Exactly right. Well, as I was saying off air, this is... I'm the guest that's been on the most.
Are you feeling a bit less nervous now?
Because I was definitely nervous. Yeah, I was nervous the first time. You know, it's kind of weird, you know?
You're hearing yourself talk,
you don't know what to say, you sort of get a bit on the spot, but I don't know, I'm feeling all right today. See what happens.
As soon as you put the headphones on, it gives you a whole different vibe.
I'm on the radio, boys.
Yeah. Wow, I made it. No, you get really immersed into it. Like we went on Marky's show and he doesn't use headphones when he was recording. And I was like, oh, this is weird. It feels just a lot more like a normal conversation.
Yeah, it was a lot harder for me.
Yeah.
It was a lot harder to keep track of what the hell was going on.
I can imagine.
Getting the vibes, you know, but... Anyway, so we're back again. We're going to try to sort of recreate the magic that we had last week. I've forgotten basically everything we spoke about.
So. Yeah, same here. So, Shuey, what's our topic for this week?
Well, I know this very well. I know the topic like the back of my hand. Just joking. The topic is the road to success.
Success
in general.
I feel like it's a good ending point for the season. I have a feeling that a lot of the other topics that we've had sort of led up to this anyway. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I feel like we were trying to, you know, give everyone advice on improving these different areas of their life to then lead to success.
I mean, everything leads to success eventually.
All roads lead to Rome.
I suppose what I wanted to start with is, I mean... success is all relative, right? So each person has their own ideas of success. So what's success mean for you guys? What does success mean to you?
Start us off, Zariel.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks for volunteering me, Shuey. Success. I feel like success is when you find yourself in a place where you are happy and satisfied with all the areas of your life that you value. Mm-hmm. For that be, you know, career, that be relationships, friendships, you know, like your house / assets, you know, your good relationships with your family, and you feel like you, you know, everything that you desire, you're able to reach some sort of satisfaction with those. Like you know, if there's something you want to achieve, you find yourself able to get that, well, not easily, but you're able to work towards it and achieve it, and it doesn't feel like anything's too out of your reach.
Nothing's out of reach.
Yeah. That's me at least.
So success, I think your average person, if you ask them off the street, what is success? I think money ties into it some way. I think that's kind of like the more, I guess, accepted answer. Like in some way, right? Like obviously what Zar said is spot on, right? Like it's maybe like, I guess what Zar's touching on is almost a bit of like happiness in general. Yeah. Like you could be successful and unhappy and then relationships might not tie into that so much. But there's no two ways about it. I think to be successful, you need to be happy, at least in some way. Because if you're a super unhappy person, it feels like it's unsustainable, or you're going to be so horrible to be around that success is so much harder to find.
Exactly. Like if I was like getting paid 500 grand a year, but I fucking despised my job, I would hate going. No matter how much money I get paid, I mean, I'll do it.
But would you feel successful?
I mean, that's the thing when I was saying, like, different aspects of your life. Mm. Like, so I'd be successful in work, but then, I mean, if I'm living an unhappy life, that to me, I've failed. Like,
yeah.
What's the point? You know what I mean? But success to me is, I want to get to a point where I just don't stress about things. Like, your daily life is filled with less stress and worries and more sort of just going with the flow and just, you know, having opportunities.
Yeah, great.
And I feel like, I mean, you'd need to have some sort of money. You need to be comfortable, at least financially free to a degree, to be able to go to a restaurant and not care what things pay for.
I think I would sum it up as sort of shortly as being able to achieve the things you want, mm-hmm. I think is what I see as success. And, you know, having money definitely helps with a lot of areas of life. You know, you're like, I want to get this car. You have money, you're able to do it. I want to buy two houses. Yep, you're able to do it. Like, things like that.
I don't
obviously,
know. So I don't
want
to worry about can I pay for dinner today? Do I need to eat a $5 meal? Or do I have to, you know, $2 meal? Instant noodles.
As soon as you can stop budgeting your food budget, that's where I reckon that's like complete comfort zone. Where you just like, you don't care how much your groceries or how much money you spend on food each week. Because, I mean, really, it's...
You're able to spend what you want and still make money each week and still save and, like, that's...
Well, and that's why I think success is so up to each individual person, right? Because I know people who are very wealthy and they would refuse to spend more than $50 a week on their food, right? They're cooking every meal, they're living very frugally, but yet on many metrics, they're successful. So it is all about what you stress about the most, what you want the most.
And it comes down to values.
And it being in a spot where you can do that without
achieving the things that you want to do, being able to do that.
Well, a lot of people say that money doesn't buy happiness, but I would want to counter that by saying opportunities create opportunities for happiness and money creates opportunities. So really, you need money in life to be... I mean, to get to a level of happiness, I'm saying that you can be happy when you're poor, broke. You definitely can. I mean, but it's easier to be happy when you have more opportunities in your life. And unfortunately, you need money to create opportunities.
I think, it's a really good point. I feel like a lot of people, and this is why it's a really important conversation. A lot of people think it's just money. They think it's just, as long as I get money and I have all the money, then I'll be happy. And that's where, you know, people say money doesn't buy happiness. I'm like, I disagree to an extent because I think it does, but I think when people focus too much on that and not about, you know, achieving other things in their life, that's when it can lead to sort of depression in those sorts of areas.
When you're sort of just, I mean, me personally, especially lately since I got this new job, I've been very much just focusing on that. And not going to lie, a lot of my other aspects of my life have sort of gone down because, I mean, you only have so much attention span. You can only focus on some things. And if you want to succeed in those aspects, you need to put a lot of your focus on it. And it took me a long time to sort of realize that. And I'm just like, if I want to hit my career goals or anything, I have to make it my priority. And it's those people obviously that say that, like, I want to be successful, I want to do all this, but then their priorities show other things. Like they would rather go drinking on the weekend. They'd rather go to a trip around the world or whatever, rather than, you know, make the hard sacrifices now so you pay off later.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And I wanted to ask you guys as well, like, because we were going to touch on failure versus success, right? If you think, if you believe you're not succeeding or you believe someone else isn't succeeding, do you think that's failing or do you think there's like there's a bit in between that you can be on the way to successful but you're not exactly failing? Like, what do you guys reckon?
I think failure and mistakes have such a bad stigma, but I don't look at them as bad things. You know what I mean? I'm like, I feel like to fail at something means you've taken a risk. And if you don't take risks in your life, you're never going to get anywhere. So you need to be able to, I feel like you need to create a lot of failures, a lot of mistakes in your life early on. So then you build a better foundation moving forward.
I definitely don't think like the opposite of success is failure in like a thing by thing basis. It's like, it's a culmination of your previous work and undoubtedly you're going to have failures along the way. So on the short term, you can have like, was this particular business venture a success or a failure? But, you know, if you're successful, doesn't mean that you can't have had failures along the way. Like, failures are so important. But also, I guess, answering your question directly, Zar, if you're not successful, are you by extension a failure? Yeah. Definitely not.
No,
definitely
not.
Your life is so long. There are so many people who are millionaires in their late 30s, 40s, 50s. And being a millionaire is not the prerequisite for success either.
No, no.
There's so much of it is like, just... I guess if you're in a good spot, you're trying to do something. I think in many ways, being a failure is giving up.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I literally was just thinking that.
As soon as you give up on something, that's when you know you failed, because there's no chance of ever succeeding.
Yeah.
And I feel like success is just like created by a bunch of different failures.
Yeah, definitely.
Like you need to fail a bunch of times before you get to the point.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you want to succeed at something, you're most likely going to fail multiple times on the pathway there.
Yeah.
Because you need to fail to understand what the success is. I think I brought this up last time we recorded this. You know, to have something good, you need to know what bad is to actually have a reference point. For knowing what success is, you need failure. And, you know, it takes a lot of time to fail over time to eventually reach success. And even if you reach success, you'll probably go, oh, well, I want more success. Yeah. And then it's like, when does it actually success for someone?
You know? You can get lucky. You can become successful without having any or maybe negligible failures.
Yep.
But it's the failures, I think, which really sort of give someone the drive and the will, the
hunger.
Like, sure. The ability to push through, right? Like to keep that perseverance. Resilience. Yeah.
Perseverance. That's a good word.
That's having failures along the way. Yeah. So it's not like you need failures to be successful, but every failure you have, as cliche as it sounds, it does make you stronger.
Yeah.
It gives you perspective. And then especially if you have a big failure, you bounce back and suddenly you're further along. You realize it's not such a big deal.
It's sort of like one step back, two steps 100%, forward. 100%. Sort of I think I brought it up last time. It's just like the most successful people are the ones that experience failure, but then they kept going. They kept pushing through. Like, I think I used the example as J.K. Rowling last week. Is just like,
oh, yeah.
She got like turned down by 14 different publishers before someone actually took a chance. And then she became a billionaire overnight.
Yeah.
Overnight.
I often think about those publishers that denied her. Oh, and like when she finally got published, they're like, oh, fucking damn it.
I had that last week on my desk, man.
Yeah. Like, oh man.
What's like the people that's like fear of missing out? As soon as you see something big, like if you would just imagine if you just sold, just bought Bitcoin like 2 weeks ago and then it dropped like 40,000, whatever it did. Like you'd be like, what the fuck? But then opposite, if you bought in now and then all of a sudden it went up 20, like it's all perspective, like where you get in. But if you don't get in there, you know, if it is successful, you're like, man, I should have got in. But if it fails, you'd be like, yeah, fuck you. I've got it right.
This is not financial advice.
No, definitely not.
We'll bring Mackie back on to do some day trading techniques.
But I'm just going
to
point out, if you're taking financial advice from a podcast called Average Advice, you're a dum-dum.
Just throw all your money there. It'll be all right. You'll be fine. Anyway, so let's talk about the pathways to success. And like, because obviously, and we talked about this last week, and it's good to bring it back.
I have a feeling we're going to talk about everything that we talked about last week.
Well, yeah,
because it was good content. Yeah. Why not?
As we continue, I remember things that I mentioned and then things we talked about. So I wanted to talk about, because obviously myself, and you guys are well aware, I've been to uni. Mm-hmm. I've got big hex debt. And I've got a degree and a postgrad diploma. But both you guys, you know, neither of you have degrees, but you know, unfortunately. But you know, Shuey, for instance, like you found yourself in a really good job now, you're doing really well for yourself. But you never went to uni. Mm. And in fact, you were saying last week you barely completed year 12. Definitely. You had to go back and do it the year after. Yep. So school was never something that you were interested in, I suppose, is the best way to say it, or maybe not particularly good at in certain areas.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's more, I'm undiagnosed, but I'm convinced I have ADHD or some sort of attention deficit thing.
Yeah.
I could not bring myself to do assignments. And it's not like that. It sounds like quite a cop-out, right? I definitely feel like a lot of it's just laziness, you know? Like I started off by waiting to the last night to do my assignments. I waited to the very last second. And then one day I realized that if I said that, oh, I was sick, oh, I couldn't do this, I could get an extension.
Yeah.
And then I realized if I wrote a note from dad and faked his signature and was just like, oh, I can get 2 weeks extension. And then suddenly it's like, no more extensions. I was like, oh, well, okay, well, whatever. I won't do this one. Realized I still got credit, you know? Yeah. Like, I obviously didn't for that assignment. I still passed the class. And then suddenly it's year 12 and I'm going like 10 out of 50 days. And
so you basically did the bare minimum to get through it.
Literally. Especially when you were living like right across the road from school. And you were like, oh, I could just like go home and no one would care.
Yeah, because you go, you know, you have a few off periods and you go, I'm just going to go home, play some games. Then suddenly you're like,
why would I go back?
I could go back. It's, or
especially, I think it was at the same time because your dad was often on business trips
exactly
too.
Right.
Which were like, so you were basically an 18-year-old with no supervision.
Yeah. Like 15, 16. From 15, especially, like, that would just be gone for like weeks at a time. Yeah.
It's especially the case, like high school, obviously, we're still considered children and like you
we
have to
children
be at school and they basically have to watch over us. When you get to college and uni, it's like all on you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, don't have to be here if you don't.
Even
want to.
In year 11, if you don't rock up to school, they're not chasing you around.
Yep.
They're just like, oh well, you'll fail. They don't
care.
Yeah. They're like, well, don't come here if you.
And as much as that really hurt me, it was a great lesson.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly you go, oh, my consequences of action. Actions have consequences. It's so weird, right?
I kind of
go to work and I don't. Oh, don't go to school. I don't get my.
Well, that's
my
the thing. But like, I have a feeling you and I were the same in regards to. If you're forced to learn something that you don't give a fuck about, you're not gonna put effort in. Like me personally, like if I don't care about the subject matter and I'm just forced to learn something, like if I was forced to do math, I fucking hated math, right? But I'm forced to do it. What I did like about math is there's always a right answer, so you could just fucking figure it out, right? But like English or anything like that, when it's just like, you know, it's all rationales and shit like that, I'm just like, I don't care, man. And then I learned more outside the year out of school, the first year out of school, I swear I learned more than the whole 5 years
totally
of school.
Agree. Same year.
Because I'm actually like going out and learning things that I want to learn about and the things that help me.
Mm.
But I didn't get to a point where I actually cared about sort of, I didn't really look at my future and I was like, what do I want to do in the next 15 years? I didn't really think like that until like 25, 26. It's really late. And I really wish I could go back in time, you know, when all your parents and stuff, what do you want to do when you're older? My viewpoint was, I don't know. I haven't done enough. I'm just going to do a heaps of different jobs until I figure out what I like. That's a bad way to do it. Like, yes, you want to do a bunch of different jobs to figure out what you like, but I mean, have some sort of plan, have some sort of goal, because you're just wasting time.
Well, that is true, but we've talked last week, which was quite good, so we'll try and sum it up. We talked about how you need something that you quite like career-wise. You know, you can't... I think it's important not to get too deep into your career and just say, I'm in too deep now, I can't move away,
you get
I'm
trapped
doing this
that way
for life, and then you hate it, you get burnt out.
By the way, we forgot to mention as well what Shuey does, and him and Shuey are both in IT, and so I was bringing this up because their jobs didn't require the uni experience, but then you were gonna mention, as we did last week, that as you get higher, it becomes valuable to have those degrees.
Well, that's the thing, like... Because whenever I told people I wanted to do IT, everyone was like, you're going to need a uni degree. I'm like, my viewpoint on uni was just like, even if it says you need a uni degree to get in, you don't need a uni degree to get in. Like they say if you had a uni degree, it would be a lot easier and a lot less steps to take. But I guarantee any job that you want to get into, if you want it hard enough, there is definitely ways to get in. You just have to figure it out and think outside the box. Like, look at transferable skills you've got. What skills do you have that you've already had that work within that degree? And then, you know, double down on that. Like, jump in
so
on that.
One
thing
I found quite interesting was when I first, I basically, you know, failed year 12 and then needed a job and went straight into help desk work. So that's, you know, entry-level IT work.
That's what I mean.
And a lot of my friends around me were going through uni, getting their degrees, and I was, you know, making a full-time wage. I was living, I was doing my thing. And then after a couple of years, you know, you start to get a bit more established. You have maybe a promotion here or there. It got to the stage where I was probably about 4 years into my degree and I was making, you know, what I considered decent money. And I was looking at my friends who were just coming out of uni doing basically entry-level, you know, office work or whatever they could get their hands on. And I was thinking, I've made more money. I've worked this whole time and I don't have a hex debt. I'm a genius. This was the best plan. Uni's a scam. Blah, 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 blah. All ridiculous. And so now as I get deeper into my career, the people who actually got the degrees are starting to catch up. And I'm now around people who do have degrees. And I'm starting to look at them and say, they actually have a pretty good understanding of a lot of core concepts that I just never learned. So because you don't have a degree giving you the full fundamentals, it's on you, you as a career person, you as a person, to learn everything yourself. So if you want to get a role, you've got to go out and do a course that's specific to that. You've got to somehow network, find your way into a place where you can get experience so that you can actually learn the role. But there's so much stuff that you don't realize you don't know. So you don't get a chance to say, okay, I'm going to go learn that because I've never heard of it. But in uni, it sort of gets covered off a little bit.
Yeah, that's. I think I was telling that before when I'm, because I'm in a place, obviously, like you've been in IT for 10 years. So I'm in a lot earlier spot than you, but trying to figure out a pathway within IT when you're not in the industry is really difficult because there's so many different ways and you don't know what you enjoy because you haven't done anything yet. So you need to sort of, that's why I wanted to start at the entry level position. So I didn't have those knowledge gaps, but even really at entry level, you still have fun when you're trying to learn something yourself, you're making the structure plan, you're making the lesson plan, but you're coming from a place of no knowledge. So it's hard to create a lesson plan that gives you good fundamentals when you have no idea what you're talking about. You know what I mean? So you have, basically what I do is just ask people that are in it and you'd be like, what should I be learning right
and
now?
And the funny thing on that is that you ask probably three or four of us who are established in IT, you probably got four or five different answers.
Well, and they're all, you guys all do different things. I mean, you and Rob, obviously in the cyberspace where WAM is in more networking and infrastructure and virtualization. So like those kind of, so many different aspects, but definitely. I mean, I used to recruit in IT, which would definitely helped. Like I figured out the
you had a lot more than a complete layperson's understanding of how it's structured.
Well, I knew the lingo too. Like the lingo is just, I mean, it's a different language basically when you're talking to an IT person, you're like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Oh yeah. That story of my life, dude.
Yeah.
So just for everyone listening. Yeah. I mean, all of my close mates, probably, I've got maybe six or seven close male friends, five of which are in IT. I'm pretty sure five.
Everyone except DeCruz.
Yeah, basically. Me and DeCruz are the only ones not. Oh, Ross isn't as well.
Oh, true.
Shout out to those boys. Yeah, so a good example. I mean, I'm happy hanging out Whammy, Steve,
with
Chewy, and they would like start talking about IT. And I was sitting there. I'm like, okay, I'll try and jump in if any. And nope. Nope. All right, just go fuck me then. All right.
Well, it's funny because I mean, even before I was in the industry, I could still understand conversations. I know what you guys are talking about. But then when you guys start talking about ray tracing and all this, I'm like, I don't give a fuck. It's because that's gaming speak. That's not IT speak. That's the next level of just like gaming and knowing the hardware of gaming. Like if you know heaps about graphics cards, you're basically a gamer. Like what's the other point of having that knowledge?
Mm.
You know what I mean? So, but I want to talk about what your road, you said that obviously you took, it must've been hard. Cause I know you were the only one in our friendship group that, I mean, as soon as we left school, like six or seven of us all went into a gap year immediately. And you're the only one that went immediately into uni.
Yeah.
So what was that sort of like, what was that like?
Oh, it was difficult. Trade-offs?
Cause I think what uni has its benefits and uni is, but you have to know why you're going. I think the mentality of people that their parents pushing them like, you need to go to uni after college, you need to do this, but they don't say why. Like if you don't have a career goal that needs uni, there's no point going, you know what I mean? So
Let me jump in there, right? I agree that you can get by without it. But having a degree is never a bad thing. Like, as I said, for years, I thought I was some sort of genius for not going to uni. I cheated the system, blah, 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 blah. But, I'm a bit different being in the private sector. I work, for government, but I'm, contracted to private companies who aren't so picky about it. But a lot of the older, more established things, whether it be like a bigger American company or whether it be like the public service, for example, especially when you want to get into management down the line.
Yeah, you need like an MBA or something.
They all help, but like in the short term, for example, my partner spent so long trying to get a entry-level office role. She had a Bachelor of Writing. You'd think that that would be a huge leg up, and that's still like not enough.
Mm.
Obviously, that's a very specific example being a very competitive industry. But I think a degree, if you have no other way to break in, it helps so much. And like the public service, half the managers I know have some completely unrelated degree, and I bet they would have found it a lot harder to get that role without it.
Because it just proves to employers that you're willing to put the hard yards in.
It proves that you've got some level of discipline, you've got some level of like being able to make a sacrifice, work hard, and you can absorb information.
It shows maturity too, or the fact that you finished it.
I cannot relate to.
Correct. So definitely when you were saying, I don't think my parents like pushed me into it. They were very encouraging of uni.
Mm.
I got, my dad Mum's got a degree. Gav, my stepdad, and my granddad. Both my mum's parents have degrees as well. So it's all an academic uni family.
You were very like sure on what kind of career you wanted.
I mean, I thought I was.
Yeah. I mean, so, you wanted to do physio, right?
I was in college, and you know, we're in year 11 and 12, and then I started, you know, pressuring myself because I was like, shit, I mean, I'm almost out of school. What do I want to do? Like, what, I have to think of something I want to do. And I was into my sport, and I was kind of interested in science, and I was like, oh, physio. And then, you know, talk to the career counselors at college, talk to my parents, talk to Gav. Gav, who, my stepdad's an academic, he's a lecturer at ADFA. Mm-hmm. So, you know, very, very intelligent guy, did lots. He has a PhD, so yeah,
definitely
uni academic. Was huge for him. Yeah. And they were always like, tertiary, you should go to uni.
He works at uni, so yeah. Like it's his whole livelihood is uni.
Yeah. So, you know, and especially for something like physio, you have to have a degree to be a physio. You have to have tertiary.
Like a doctor, right?
Yeah, you're essentially a health professional. Yeah. You get an ARPA number, like it's like, yeah, being a doctor. Yeah. So things like that, obviously, you have to go to uni. You have to get
a degree. I respect anyone that wants to do medical science because I'm just like, one, no, thank you. That is way too much stress and complicated. To me. Yeah,
so much to remember.
I don't want my life in my hands. Let alone someone else's life.
I worked with a few people at Capital who were doing medicine or medical science, and basically from the time they started their degree, like undergrad, to the time where they actually finished their postgrad medicine, it was about probably 8 years. Well,
yeah. And then they have to do medical school after that.
Yeah, but it was 8 years, and you know, they've got to work part-time jobs. I knew a guy who was doing medicine and he only worked 3 hours a week.
Yeah.
Because he was like, he was saying his wife was like an accountant. She made lots of money. And he was like, I'm the long-term investment.
Yeah.
Mm. And he was making nothing.
I think it's like lawyers and doctors are the ones that you have to study so much. But once you're there, that's why they get paid so much.
Another thing you'd remember with lawyers. So I know this because my partner's sister was a lawyer.
Okay.
And so when you first start, as I'm not sure what the right term is, associate. Entry level, it is so competitive. You have to be working.
You're working
10
like
12 hour days every single day.
Yeah.
And you're still making not amazing money. You're probably on about 70.
Pretty good for entry level.
That's great. But when you look at your hourly rates, you could make more in public service.
Yeah, it's 100%. It's the same for medicine. You finish, medicine and then if you manage to get an internship, right? And you be an intern for a year or two, you're getting paid fuck all and you're working like 60, 70 hours
a week.
You
wouldn't break even until you're 30.
And you're working like overnights. Your hours, they're just always changing. You're on call constantly.
That's why I would never be able to do a doctor.
And when you're an intern, you're still technically a student. So you've got to do exams. You've got to pass all these things while you're actually considered a doctor. And then you do that. Then you do your residency and you're not done yet. You still got to go and go and go. Then you pass your residency and then you're a doctor. And it can take like 12 years. And it's like, you know, and you're not making much money until you actually finish that residency.
Then you start paying back your hex debt.
Yeah, exactly. But quickly, hopefully.
Yeah, look, fuck that. That's all I can say for that. Like, especially, I think the lawyers and stuff, I can understand, like, they put them in that bullpen. You're like, you have to work hard. Like if you leave before 5 o'clock on your first year, you're not going to make it. But once you put that leg up, I think it's work them so hard is one, you have to learn so much at the beginning of that kind of career. Plus also it puts you that hunger for like the drive. But like, then you look at like the sort of senior lawyers and the named partners and stuff, they're making like 600 grand a year.
So
they could easily make way more than that. But that's also, you look at them, they're all old. You need like 20 plus years experience.
Yeah.
You'd be in the right place at the right time.
To become a partner in one of those large firms, you need to fork up money. And most of the time it's like $1 million buy-in or something like that.
Might be way more. Some of those big firms. Yeah. They're
like because the name partners are the even bigger. Those are the ones obviously in the name, obviously. Mm. But they put the most money in. And it's weird how a partnership works, but especially in a law firm, because it's like everyone needs to put money into the firm. And it's so weird. It's like this freaking gang.
I just had a mind blank. What I wanted to just continue on with the uni thing, and you, because you were saying obviously you guys, none of you guys were at uni when I was at uni. I went straight into uni after year 12, which look, you know, now it's fine. I've finished it all, but like I look back and go, maybe that wasn't the right choice for me. Because I feel like if I had had a year or two off to sort of figure out, you know, finally being an adult out of school and kind of figuring out what is it I want. And, you know, because you guys were always, you know, hanging out on, you know, evenings or weekends when I had either work, because I had uni, so I had to work evenings, or, you know, I had assignments. So if I went to hang out with you guys, I was constantly like, oh man, I should be at home.
Had something in the back.
Yeah. And I was like, I couldn't, I wouldn't feel totally relaxed. Whereas I see you guys like, yeah, we've just done a week of work. Let's just like chill, just have some beers, you know? So I feel like if I'd had a year or two of doing that with you guys, working, just making some money and just kicking it, then I would have been like, okay, I'm done with this. What is it I really
here's
want?
A, here's uni, a question for you though. If you say had a couple years off and you go, oh, I need a job. Oh, I'll get a public service role. I'm going to do this. Would you have a degree now? Maybe not.
Maybe not. But that's it.
Is that such a bad thing?
Maybe not. I'm not saying it is.
But, you know, I think you're in a better spot now. Yeah. Well, obviously you sacrificed a lot when you were young, but to get success, you need to make sacrifices.
To be fair though, I kind of, you know, scraped through my undergrad degree.
Because I was distracting you every day.
I was distracted. I wasn't getting super great marks. I mean, I did get the degree in the end. I passed.
The thing is like me speaking from experience. I have a feeling that if you don't go straight into uni after school, you're less likely to finish it. Because me personally, I didn't go back to uni. I think it was 2 years after I left school, and by that point, I had already been out of student mode. And like you're not in sort of learning mode. You're not used to going and doing things that you're told to do. Like. But as soon as, if you leave just from college, you're still in that student mode. You're still in that, like, every year I'm getting starting a new class.
I mean, because when I was at uni, when you're at uni and you're 18 and you're there, that you know that you'll start uni and there's a lot of people that are in your course that are, like, 35.
Yeah,
and it's their first degree. And the mindset that 35-year-olds have when they come into uni is much better than an 18-year-old.
For sure.
And they've been out of school for, you know, 20 years because and because they're like, okay, I haven't done anything. Well, I've just been working, but I want a degree. And because they've had all that life experience, they've been coming in a much mature and focused attitude.
They've got a work ethic.
And that's so the older students, the mature age students, always were getting the top marks, always asking all the questions, always sitting at the front, engaging with the teacher.
Yeah,
all of them.
Yeah, you don't go to uni when you're 35. Just let's see what happens.
Yeah. No.
You're, you're there because you definitely want to be.
Well, you're not going to be wasting money at that point.
Definitely.
Like, but like, even in the workforce, like, I mean, when I look at 18-year-olds and stuff now, it's just like they don't have the same work ethic that I know, like myself or like some of the older people do, just because they haven't been around the block. You know, they haven't experienced. Some of them, it's their first job, and like you need to work a bunch to build that work ethic.
Yeah,
you're just like. When work is not your priority at 18, which it never is, like obviously your work ethic's not going to be
true.
As good.
My work ethic was horrible. First
same.
Roles.
18, I was the worst employee. Constantly I did not give a shit. I just didn't give a shit, right?
Yep.
And now, like, I've come in to an entry-level position at a mature age. And it's like, you just take it at the grain of salt because you're just like, I don't want to lose this for science.
Yeah, well, especially
but
for you
also want to build up
so
fast.
Long.
But yeah, and also because I'm like 28 this year and I'm in an entry level role, you wanna move up quickly.
Yeah.
And if you wanna move up quickly, it means you're putting all your effort into one, doing good things. So like you're making sure you're never sick, you're never late, like you're doing all the things that, you know, you should do anyway, but they're never really that important to you at that point.
I think another huge thing for you is that you tried for a long time to get into IT.
Year and a half.
You know, like by constantly applying and seeing your friends sort of like, you know, get successful, make a lot of money. That's when you sort of go, I need to get in on this.
Yeah.
And it's when you finally get that chance. You're like, I'm going to reward you on this because I'm so motivated. I spent a year and a half being excited for this opportunity and now it's here as opposed to being 18 and being like, I got a job. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
My whole life too, like at the beginning of your career, you wish you could go back and restart it a little bit, because you're like, man, I wish I could change the, some of the things I did.
Definitely,
or just my attitude that I had. Now,
I think that for even before career, I think that back to like how I was in school.
Of course,
like,
I
wish I could change, like, having the knowledge I have now, like the way that I would approach everything would be so
completely different, right?
Yeah. Sure.
I think that's why I've been so, when now that I'm in IT, I've sort of looked at it as a restart of my career.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, now I can make the right choices and the right decisions if I willingly and focus on it correctly. Like, so that's why I'm really like cautious. I've been asking all you guys questions on what I should do next, because I don't want to make the wrong choice here. Because it's a really, really sort of fine point. You don't want to go off on the wrong tangent.
Yeah,
to
for
end
sure.
up in, like, if you end up working in the wrong place for a couple of years, you're really hard to be hireable. You know what
this
I mean?
This makes me think of something you brought up in the fake recording we did. how you were saying when you were in help desk and then you applied for a bunch of roles and you failed, and then it was actually a blessing in disguise.
So tell
us about that one
definitely.
Again.
So I was on the help desk, which, while it's so entry level, it's a technical role. You're learning how to do the technical stuff. You're on the tools, so to speak. And then I applied for this this role, and, you know, I felt very comfortable. I felt like I was one of the better service desk people. I feel like I could solve things
the
most.
You have the skills and knowledge for it.
I felt like I was really good customer service-wise. Yeah. Like, I felt like I was doing everything right. And so I applied for what was called the accounts team, which is, you know, their role would be like, okay, I've got 50 people who have asked access for this program. I'm going to just assign it to them, you know? And when you're, you know, on the phones, so to speak, the only thing that matters to you is getting off the phones.
Yeah.
How do I get a desk job, a 9-to-5 where I can have a lunch when I want, when I can just work here with earphones in and just, you
when
know,
you come in, you have
by.
A list of things to do and you just complete
and you,
that.
And you just grind
off.
Through the list, as opposed to not being able to listen to music because you're on the phone all day and being like, okay, you've got your 15 minutes break is exactly this time. You've got to be back. You know, it's so structured. So all you want to do is get off the phones. I applied for the accounts team and I thought I should have got it and I didn't get it. And I was gutted, absolutely gutted. And then, you know, went through a bit more time, applied for the level 2 team. Once again, feeling like I should have it.
Level 2 help desk?
Yeah, level 2 help desk. That's off the phone. You're still making calls, but it's more technical, basically.
Yeah, you're more calling out than calling in.
Exactly right. And so I thought I should have deserved it. And I'm sure my attitude was not good at the time, but I felt like I deserved it. I had friends in the team. I was even friends with someone who was in, like, the level 3 team. And I thought that they'd put in a good word for me. And so I thought I deserved it. I did a few little trial days with them as well, and I thought they went well. Didn't get it. Absolutely gutted.
Yeah. Mm.
And then we moved to the 24/7 team, you know, the shift work team. and then there was an incident management role going off in a different building that was all prestigious. That, you know, that was like a $30,000 pay rise. I was like, that's where the ballers are. That is like the pinnacle. I would love to go over there. And I applied. And then I had a trial shift and I thought it went well, but looking back now, I can see why it didn't go well. I fell asleep.
You fell asleep.
Yeah. So
Was it a night team?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what happened was I basically, the way you'd go out there is they'd have someone call in sick and they'd go to the service desk. Hey, you know, as a feeding spot, hey, who can do this shift? And I was struggling with sleep for the last couple of days. I was going to call in sick. And I was like, this is such a good opportunity. I literally slept like 1 or 2 hours between shifts. I was like, no, I can do this. I can do this. And I felt like everything was going really well. And then I woke up literally as people were coming in. And I was like, yeah, hopefully they understand. But I didn't.
How much work did you miss because you were asleep?
I have no idea. I mean, so, you know, it was a shift work role where it was very quiet. I fell asleep because there was nothing to do.
Okay.
But that is not okay.
Yeah.
You cannot fall asleep. That was an important role. You cannot fall asleep. So in hindsight, obviously I didn't get it. If I was looking at me as a potential person, I would have 100% been definitely not that guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't realize how bad of a fuck up it was at the time.
Mm.
Didn't get that role. Once again, gutted. That's when you start to doubt everything.
Mm-hmm.
Been
there.
But, and so then, you know, out of just, I've tried every other team, somehow I... through another friend, I got talking to one of the team leaders of the Gateway Engineers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's another niche. And built up a relationship with that guy. He started doing a bit of lessons, some emails, figuring out how to learn more. They were just, you know, basically planting the seeds to find someone who could move up into that team. And I was the only person who really, or there's a few of us, but I was one of the few people who took that really seriously. Every week they'd send out some questions, you'd figure out the answers, you send them back. Most people couldn't really be fucked. Oh, blah, 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 blah. I made that the priority. Definitely did that. Long story short, interviewed, got the role, and then that was definitely the best thing in my career that's ever happened, was getting into that world,
because
you're just learning so much. But now I look back, the accounts team, dead end. There is nowhere, nothing you're learning that helps anywhere else. And you look at the people in that team, they were there for like 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, that is a terrible spot to be. That was such a blessing in disguise. And then the level two team, that, you know, there's a career there, but you are not making good money.
No.
Everyone just, that's the natural progression. It's just flooded with like senior service desk staff. You know, once again, not the best work. It's way better than being on the phones, but that was definitely a blessing in disguise, avoiding that. And then the other one was incident management. That's non-technical. Like, that would have been a terrible thing to get that.
Because I had the same thing. I got offered within my current company the IC role, which is incident coordinator, which is basically the same thing. But then I also got offered in another company, sort of something similar. And they called me back once they realized my clearance and stuff was fine recently. And I told them, I'm like, oh, look, I'm just looking into it. I'm not really interested in this role because it's completely off the tools. Mm-hmm. And then they kept saying, oh, yeah, we'll try to find you something else. But like, oh, man, that HPI team really loved you. Like, and I was like, I understand they love me because no one else wants to do this role. But yeah, it's the same thing. You have to understand what you want. What you're looking for, and then just don't accept anything else.
Yeah, and definitely. Like, and that's the thing, though. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was so clouded by the focus of getting off the phones. Mm-hmm. And I'd been a service desk person for, I think, 2 or 3 years by that point, which is long.
That's a long time.
That's long. And, you know, I think a big part of that was because I was at one company, which then got bought out. So then I had to start fresh again in another place. Did that for a year and then went into like a quality assurance role. So I was off the tools again, focusing on customer service. And then after a year of that, I'm like, what am I doing? I need to get back on the tools. Then I went into the shift work team and that's when it all started opening back up again. These are little things that in the moment you think that's what you want, but it didn't happen. And it is the best thing that ever happened to me.
I think
all three of them.
The fact that I was in recruitment and sales, but the fact that it took me a year and a half of just getting rejected to get into IT, I think finding a new job and finding a new place to live are the worst, because you just get rejected 24/7. You have to be able to accept that. And in my sales career, they teach you the law of averages, and it's a really good mindset to be in because it keeps you positive through rejection. The idea of law of averages is if you knock on enough doors and get enough no's, you will get a yes eventually. You just have to not stop. You have to keep going because the law of averages are on your side. But sometimes you have to, it's a lot of people you have to knock on the door to get one yes. You know what I mean? But
that's
about that one yes that you're looking
for. That's exactly what we were saying at the start. You need to experience failure before you succeed. That's how you get to success.
I have a similar story
as well. Oh, sorry, were you?
No, I'm not.
sorry. You have a similar story. I was working at Capital Pathology and I wasn't hating my life, but, you know, I wasn't getting paid particularly well. And I wasn't in any, I was in the SRA team. So we're just like the specimen reception. We just log it in, make sure it's dotted.
It's similar like your entry level role into sort of like what your field, right?
Yeah. It was just, I was in the lab, you know, it was a science, you know, so there was options to be promoted to scientists, and you need degrees for those. So I was just in a sort of a path aid role doing that. Wasn't doing particularly anything that my degree required. It was all just sort of admin stuff and just like learn on the job. And then I got an interview for ACT Pathology, which is the public
state
pathology lab. Yeah. The government, the ACT health one. So, you know, much better pay. And it was an actual like molecular scientist role.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, this is a big opportunity. This would be awesome for my career.
Just want to pause there. I just love how like people make the titles sound really cool.
Yeah.
Like in any job. It's just like,
I once saw customer service engineer.
IT clerk.
So I went to the interview, obviously. And you know, I feel like I did pretty well, but I think that, obviously I didn't have enough experience as a scientist to actually get that role. So I didn't get it. Obviously, as you said, you feel pretty gutted and you're like, oh man, I'm not good enough for that kind of stuff. But you know, when I was in the interview, I didn't feel connection with the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you go to an interview, just like, I just don't feel it with them. Definitely, like, I don't feel like they understand, like, they don't like me, you know, for whatever reason.
Mm.
And I feel like they were way too serious. And I was like, oh, I'm a bit of a goofball, you know?
Yeah.
So, obviously, I applied for a few other roles. And then it took, I think, 6 months later. And then I got this role at the TGA. And then, obviously, the job I'm in now doesn't need a degree. It's all on the job. But having that, learning the regulatory space of the government, especially in the health field, which is, you know, I got a degree in biological science. But just going to the interview, and when I was getting interviewed, I'm like, these guys are cool. Like, they, mm-hmm. and I would give them like an answer just to kind of joke around, and they would laugh, be like, oh yeah, that's perfect. You'd fit in with the team. And I was saying what I liked about the, you know, when you just read the job description, and it was like, we're looking for a hardworking, blah, 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 dare we say fun worker. And I was like, that's kind of funny. And I brought it up. She was like, I put that in there for that reason. So, yeah, I feel like, as you said, it's a blessing in disguise, and I'm really enjoying this role now. And, you know, you got to go through those humps to get somewhere that you,
I think,
that you want to be.
Coming from a recruitment idea, like, person, and being on the other side of the interview, like, me personally, when I go for interviews, I'd rather go for an interview and not get it rather than just not go for the interview. You know what I mean? It's just like, you need to be, because some people just don't go for interviews unless they really want a job, which is, I don't think is the good thing to do, because you need practice with interviews.
Definitely.
And the more interviews you go on, the better you're going to be. And the fact that, I mean, I used to do it as a job and I was the one interviewing people, it's given me a good understanding of, I mean, what people are looking for in interview rooms, and the way that you answer questions. Some people think that, like, after the interview's over, like, they've stopped considering you and stuff. And I've had people, when I was interviewing them, it was when I was recruiting for cleaners and stuff up in Sydney, but I'd interview them. And then after the interview, they're like, oh, I don't really care if I got the job. I just needed to get Centrelink. And I was just like, why would you tell me that? I was going to give you the job. Like, now I'm, because you told me that. Well, that's the thing. Like, he probably didn't want the job. He just needed to go to so many interviews to get his Centrelink, right? But he killed the interview. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, if you're going to do that, like, why try in the interview? You know what I mean? I've had multiple people show up, and the first thing they say was like, I don't really care if I want this job. And I was like, well, we can just end this here.
That is such a horrible
answer. Like,
oh, that's brutal.
When they were like 15-year-olds, like, super, not 15, like, they were like 20-year-olds, but they just had nothing going for themselves. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, if you're applying for cleaning roles and you don't care if you get the cleaning role, you probably need to figure out what's going on with your life. Definitely.
My boss was telling me, because they were doing interviews for some people in my team, and she was saying that she interviewed someone and she was like, so why do you want this job? And apparently they said something really dumb, like, oh, you know, it's close to work, so I don't have to drive too far or something like that. She's like, you could have just said money and that would have been a better answer.
Literally anything. Like,
just say, oh, I want more money.
A good answer for that question. You get asked it every time.
Yeah.
It's so simple. Oh, I like what this company's about, or, oh, I think it'd be a good step for my career. You're going to show that you're not going to get this role and then move in like a month.
Yeah.
I think people, for me specifically, it's the ones that don't read don't read up on the stuff beforehand. Like, the first question I always ask them, I'm like, what do you think of the company? And then they're like, oh, I don't really know too much. I'm like, you had this interview for a week and a half. You didn't even look at the website. You know what I mean? Like, just doing that little bit of extra research. Like, what's the company that you're applying for? Why do you want to work for this company? If you don't know anything about them, you can't answer those questions. And if you don't answer those questions in interview, you're never going to get the job. Guarantee it. Because I'm just like, well, if you're not even going to do the due diligence to pretend that you want this job, why would you do the diligence when you've got the job? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just like the little things. Just like, look at the fucking website.
And
like,
I think that's
the first thing I do.
And I think that's, you know, I want to talk about the mindset of someone who is successful. And I feel like someone like that, you know, oh, I just want this for my interview for Centrelink.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the mindset of a successful person. That's the mindset of someone who wants to do the bare minimum to get to scrape by.
Yeah, that's someone who's not even, their goal is not success.
Their goal is not trying
to even be successful.
Rich quick, basically. Those are the guys that would do, like, you know, dodgy shit to get a quick payday. Like, in my mind, that's what I would say.
Yeah.
It's just like, but you look at the really successful people and, like, you try to, so, I mean, there's obviously different types. There's Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, but then there's also Warren Buffett, where he's completely different of how he made his money. But look at Elon Musk. Like, Elon Musk almost went broke 5 different times. Like, when he started up, I mean, he created PayPal, And I think he got like a couple million from that. Like,
no, he got heaps. It was
Sold it for 1.7 billion, but he had to split it between three people or something like that.
He had quite a few investors. Then he and his brother, I want to say, yeah. But he walked away with hundreds.
He put all of it into Tesla. Basically, that's why. So he took everything he made from PayPal. Everything and put it all into Tesla and Tesla.
And SpaceX.
Well, at the beginning it was Tesla, and then once they sold the Roadster, then he was able to create SpaceX.
Okay,
that's the thing.
SpaceX was after Tesla.
These people dream big and they put everything they have into whatever it is they're trying to achieve.
They bet on themselves.
They bet on themselves, exactly. Yeah. And then but then look at when SpaceX,
they're willing to fail too. They're willing to see it, risk it for the failure.
Perfect segue for what I was about to say. Yeah, SpaceX, they. When the first two or three rockets blew up, he was literally this close to bankruptcy. He was sleeping in his company. He was always working. And then it wasn't until that he actually created that, the self-landing rocket where he was actually in the green and stuff.
Quite famous at his last launch that if that wasn't successful,
he was going to be bankrupt.
He would have been bankrupt.
Yeah. Which is fucking insane. Could you imagine being... Like, you're worth $300 million, you put it all on yourself to fucking win, and then right at the last second, you're like, oh, fuck, that was close.
Yeah.
could you imagine? Dude. And he went through a divorce through that time, too. So
yeah, he's got an interesting history, that one.
But then when you look at also Jeff Bezos, right? I'm not sure if you guys looked at some of the documentaries of how Amazon was created, but it's fucking
not at all.
So Jeff Bezos is a fucking genius. So he obviously was
investment banker. I want to say
I don't know what he did beforehand.
He was definitely was it finance? I wouldn't. He was definitely
probably. It makes sense. But he created Amazon, and he was obviously in the internet boom. So it was when all these new internet sites were being a thing. But Amazon started just by sending people books. It was just a bookstore. That's it. And all these investors that he got, he kept saying, he's just like, Amazon's not going to make any money for about 10 years. You're not going to get anything back. In fact, we're going to be losing money for 10 years. And then after the books were a big thing, and then he's just like, well, let's start incorporating more things. And he started putting more things on Amazon. And after 10 years, they made no money. And somehow he convinced his investors to stay clean, stay keen. I don't understand how or what he said to them, but then obviously now it's paid off. Like, he's like the richest person in the world. Him and Elon jump between the richest person in the world.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm actually feeling a lot better about this recording of this episode. Do you guys agree?
Well, yeah, I mean, it helps when you have practice.
I feel like we talked aloud a lot more, but I don't know if we were just fluffing around.
Dare I say it? Blessing in disguise.
Yay.
Well, we had practice, so we knew what we wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm.
We could have gone, you know what? We had a good run. Let's just move on. I won't even do this one. Yeah. But
I wanted to end this episode because obviously we're talking about success, but I wanted to end because it's the end of the season and you've listened to a few of our previous episodes. And I wanted to ask you some questions based on past topics.
Let's recap.
Get a third little insight onto some of our
I suppose the main ones I wanted to bring up was what are the biggest topic that we've had that everyone's listened to is our first episode, breakups. Mm. And when we were speaking about it, we were speaking about what kind of things that we did to sort of get through a breakup, some of our worst breakups. So touch on a little bit of some of that.
So how did you recover from your worst breakup when you felt the shittest?
And was it,
the one that you're like,
did they break up with
man.
You or did you break up with them? Or?
So my worst breakup was my first serious partner. It's a bit of a weird one because I was under the impression of certain things that had happened, which didn't actually end up being the case. I thought that my girlfriend at the time had left me for one of my best friends and they'd been cheating on me the whole time. I was convinced that was the case.
I think we all were.
Many years.
Yeah.
Many years. And so that was very rough for me. It's, it's such a personal thing to happen.
Yeah.
Especially with one of your friends. I know how you feel.
You feel like you got betrayal from a mate as well.
Exactly right. So that was quite rough. And
at that point, it's bad because then you're losing two people. You're losing your friend and your girlfriend. And it creates such toxic vibes.
Yeah, it was terrible. And I've got literally no advice on the situation because I handled it terribly.
What did you do?
Well, you know, another point of this show is we tell people our mistakes so people can learn not to do those things as well.
That's a fair point.
So you tell it and don't feel ashamed.
I think the biggest thing was I just was so stuck on it for so long.
Speaking to the choir, my friend.
Preach. Let's also not forget, I should just say I was 18, 19. I was very young, very immature. I thought I knew everything. I thought I knew how it worked and what the situation was, and I let it get out of hand, you know, like with having like Facebook fights. Like it was very cringe.
Wait, between the friend?
The friend, the partner.
To be fair, like your ex also didn't handle it very well either.
No. She was, I had a lot of resentment towards her for a long time. But looking back, she, you know, had her own problems.
Yeah.
And it's a miracle that we stayed together for it was only like 9 months or something. Yeah. But, you know, we moved in together. We felt like it was all serious. And it didn't end up well. But
I swear all relationships feel super serious.
Especially when you're young. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then when you look back and you're like, why the fuck they care so much about our relationship?
So what was the tech? Did you use any technique to sort of get over it? Or was it just eventually time that you just got over
it? It's a good question. I think the biggest problem was I was too into the relationship. Like I was really needy and jealous. And this was a free woman. Mm-hmm. Like he was very, very free. Didn't feel
the don't tell me what to do kind of thing.
Yeah. And wasn't the sort of person who took relationships super seriously. That's probably unfair. Yeah. Long story short, it was never going to work out. And I could see the writing on the wall. Didn't want to let it go. Crashed and burned. And then I spent a long time trying to get over it. And then I think the worst thing I did was I actually then started dating another girl and she got sucked into the beef as well.
And so we were seeing
each other in Civic and yelling at each other.
I literally was about to bring that up because that was the one time where we all went out and then it was the first time we saw them. And then I thought everything was fine. And yep. I think it was your partner said something.
Yelling at them.
Said something. And then it was a spear tackle then and then it was real bad.
It all crashed and burned.
It was real bad. What I want to know, because obviously that person that we're speaking about is currently one of our best friends now. How long did it take you guys to mend that?
Many years.
And who was the first person that was the bigger man to extend that olive branch? I only ask because obviously I've spoken. This is speaking from experience.
And this is good. This touches into our friendship episode.
Yeah.
So because speaking from experience, me personally, especially when the relationship ends really badly, and two, it ends with that person now in a relationship with your friend. It extends that hurt until that relationship's over.
Definitely.
If they got married, I would hate them forever. I don't know why. You just resent that for a long time because it ended so badly. So me personally, it took me almost a year and a half to even want to talk to this person.
Yeah.
And the only reason I did it is because one, they were still in the friendship group and I didn't want that like awkwardness of just running into them because I mean, Canberra is a small town and I'd rather just mend fences rather than have that awkwardness. So can you take me through that?
I'm trying to wonder what was specifically going through my mind, but I think the way I ended up looking at it was that those two people dated for a handful of years on and off. I want to say, I don't actually know the nitty gritty, but from what I could tell, after we broke up, they then dated for a couple of years and you know, it didn't look like the greatest relationship from the outside. And then she ultimately, I think she left. I'm not 100% sure. They broke up. And I think after a while, I started realizing that I dodged a bullet. Blessing in disguise, which is the theme of the episode, it seems.
Yeah.
But I was just in a weird spot where I was like, I feel like if that didn't happen, I might still be dating her and I would be just as miserable.
Yeah.
So I don't see it as me being the bigger man or anything like that. Purely, we just bumped into each other and, you know, we were both pretty drunk and we just got talking. And I want to say I initiated it with him. I don't remember.
Well, if you bump into each other, it was sort of mutual, I guess.
Yeah. So I bumped into him. I don't remember exactly how it started, but I remember, you know, being friendly because, you know, the last time we saw each other, we'd try to fight each other. Like we weren't on great terms. He started apologizing and then
it helps.
Right. And I remember just like in the moment being like, I forgive you, man. I forgive you. It's all good. And, you know, by this, at this stage, not only, I was like two relationships down the road, you know, I had a long relationship with the next girl, which was good and broke up, you know, it wasn't meant to be, but then I was reasonably deep with another relationship. Yeah. And it's by that point you go, this is so long ago. Exactly. I can look at it objectively and be like, that was not a good
time.
Relationship.
Heals all wounds. As soon as you, as soon as you have no feelings anymore, that's when I like, if you have even the minuscule of feelings for your ex, it's always going to hurt to a degree. It's just like, oh, the one that got away sort of thing. But as soon as you can, as soon as you don't have that love, because I mean, guys do stupid things when they're in love. Like we spoke about that in breakups. Like I, when I'm in love and I'm hurting because of the breakup and anything, like all logic goes out the window. I don't think of logic. I'm very emotional.
Yeah.
And all my decisions are not logical. They're all emotional decisions, which are always bad.
Pretty normal
like,
too. Yep.
Like all, I mean, back really when it was really bad, especially because I had suspicions of my ex and my friend, like I had very hard suspicions. So like, because of that, I was like, and this has happened before, that because I've already experienced this, I already had suspicions. I wasn't playing games. I was like asking them to their face and they were still lying to me sort of thing. So that kind of thing was, it really fucked with your head because you're like, you're doubting yourself because you're like, is my gut right here? Because you want to believe the people that are telling your face. And then like, because of that, I started getting real bad.
And it
like,
would have, it I probably would have been easier on you if they just set it up front.
100%. 100%. If you told me straight up, I'd be like,
obviously
cool,
you would have been upset. You would have been hurt.
I would have got over it though.
But you would have recovered a lot quicker.
I mean, if someone, if my friend came up to me saying, look, I understand, like, but I'm like really in love with her. Like I don't know what to do here. I'm not a cunt, you know what I mean? Like I would be like, look, I'm upset, but I would eventually I'd come to terms with it. But the fact of the matter is I told them multiple times, I'm like, if you're lying to me right now and I find out other ways, we're done.
Yeah.
And I said that multiple times, you know what I mean? And then because of that, like I was already on edge. I was already sort of super paranoid. Like when I knew I had thoughts, I was like planning on doing drive-bys and stuff. It was, I was getting real bad. Like not that kind of drive-by, but like just drive-bys to confirm my suspicions.
Sure,
you know what I mean? And like, I never did it because I was like, I'm not that kind of guy. But the fact that I wanted to do it, like I was like, I'm in a bad spot.
I think as well, like this weekend, I can ask you another question after this, but if you have friends or a girlfriend, you know, relationship or your friends and they truly do respect and care about you, they're not gonna lie like that. They would risk hurting you to be truthful because they don't want to hurt you even more. Like I mean, that's how I would be with friends.
It's just respect.
Yeah,
and like that's why I was so angry. I'm just like, look, what the fuck's up with all this disrespect? Like, you know what I mean? I'm just like, I gave them so many chances. Like to be honest, I'm like you. I literally gave you the best chance to just be honest and everything will be fine, but you chose to lie again. To I'm like, I don't understand what was going through your head.
They would have felt committed, I guess.
Yeah, at that point.
So, obviously, that's your first relationship, and you've had a couple since then, and you're with our good friend now. So, what do you think is the key factor of the relationship you're in now that maybe you didn't have? Is there like something in particular that this makes this one more special, or it's something that they do, or like, is there anything that you can think of? Cause I can definitely think of one for Yasmin.
Yeah. So. Well, for me, I think relationships, you know, you're young, you have one, you don't really know what's good, what's bad, what you want. Everyone's different. Right. And so every relationship I've been in has been like, okay, let's see what happens. It's okay. That is the one thing I either do not want or the one thing I really want. And then you find a girl who meets those criteria and then you start to flesh out what you actually need to be in a happy relationship. And so, you know, first it's like, okay, I need someone who can be a bit more empathetic, can, you know, like be a bit more supporting.
Take a joke.
Yeah. And then you get that and you got a lot of shared interests, but then you can't really relate with like work and things like that. There's other things that you like doing that there's just no shared interests, I guess, in that sort of world.
That's the thing. Like you don't know what you don't want until you experience it.
Exactly. Like, yeah. So every relationship is just me realizing something that I want or don't want, and then just sort of like ironing that out. And then eventually you find the right girl who ticks all the boxes. And then you've got the maturity to say, I want what you've got so badly that I can compromise on other things.
And that's the thing. Compromising is everything. Like,
yeah,
it's
definitely.
The ones that are like, I want this. And if like, you're going to give me this, I'm willing to drop whatever I need
to drop that.
Like, and that's comes down to values and what you're looking for in life.
And respect.
and yep. respect.
Yeah, like, imagine that.
I mean, mutual respect goes in every aspect of life. If you give respect, most of the time you're going to get respect back. Like, for me personally, I always look at people that they want something from someone, but then their approach is like super aggressive. Like look at all these videos.
Show me your tits. Yeah.
And that's why my first relationship didn't pan out.
Like, it's just. Like, I've seen all these videos on Facebook and stuff, like, where they want something. They're arguing with the clerk, like, thinking that's going to help. And I'm like, I don't understand where you come from. Me, yeah. personally, like, you need to de-escalate situations. You need to make people like you if you're going to get what you want from them.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe comes from sales or whatever, but, like, I don't know. Like, I've always tried to de-escalate every situation. But then you see the people that, like, they come in, they're, like, arguing with people. You're like, I don't understand why you think this is going to work for you. Like,
so going back a step, as cliche as this sounds, I do think communication is the most important thing.
It is.
And I think the biggest thing is that I probably have had relationships where if I communicated what I wanted more clearly earlier on,
mm-hmm.
then it probably would have worked out a lot better. So I think you as you learn what you want or what you require... Before you're even dating, when you're still courting, when you're still sort of like, you know, flirting and getting to know the person,
mm-hmm.
you put out your cards on the table, say, you know, this is what I want. This is what, you know, I've had previous relationships and this drives me crazy. I can't handle that. And when someone goes, yeah, you know what? I will date you. They know what to expect.
Yeah, exactly.
It's when it's because the thing I always fell into the trap of was
expecting them to know.
I like this girl. I think she's really cool. I think she's really cute. I'm going to just be perfect, do everything she wants.
Yeah.
And then after a year or two,
doesn't
you
work.
Can't keep that
dude,
up.
It's and not
then,
sustainable.
It's not
resonated me with so hard.
Because, you know, a year or two in, you're comfortable. You suddenly go, I don't want to hang out with your family 4 days a week. And I don't want to go out every single weekend doing things. Yeah. I want to play computer games on the weekend. I want to go out with my friends. But when you communicate that from the start,
mm-hmm.
it's different compared to when 2 years in, you go, yeah, cool, let's knock this on the head. Let's try something different.
I think that comes down to having confidence in who you are and yourself. Like, and I think we spoke about it in the friendship episode. It's just like, when you know who you are and you're very comfortable in who you are in your own skin, you're more willing, you're less willing to compromise and change who you are to impress someone else.
Like, you have boundaries.
Yeah. You're like, I'm not going to change who I am just to impress you because I'm happy with who I am. I don't really care. And like, means you're also okay with them leaving.
Yeah.
I'm like, you have to be okay with, if you're going to give someone an ultimatum like that or anything like that, you're just like, look, I'm not okay with this. And if you have to be willing for them to, you know, say no.
That's so true.
Like, and a lot of people that offer ultimatums aren't expecting them to say no.
To call them.
Yeah. And then when they say no, they're like, what? And then they backtrack, which puts them in an even worse position.
You lose all the power.
Even
if they go, okay, cool, you're right, let's make this work.
Yeah.
You've lost all the power. It's 100%.
You can't backtrack. You have to own what you are.
A healthy person, a successful person will have boundaries, right?
Yeah.
And if... you are talking to a girl and you got kind of interested and then she crosses that boundary. If you're coming from that, you know, a lot of people that are successful, they have what's called, you know, they have an abundance mentality. I've got a lot of stuff. I'm succeeding. I achieve lots of my goals. So they don't place as much value on these sorts of things. When you're coming from a scarcity mindset, like, oh, I never get the things I want. I don't have much. You place more value and it's like, oh, you put it up on this big pedestal.
Man, I could not agree more.
So when, you know, a girl does something you don't like, you go, oh, that's okay.
It's okay.
She's really cute.
Exactly.
I'll just let it happen.
And you get walked all over.
Yeah.
And then you can't come back.
Exactly.
And it's like, the same with friendships, you know, like that's when I met you, I'd dealt with a lot of shit with my old friends. And then I come and, because I went and started hanging out with Shuey because I thought he was a nice guy. And then when I went into that relationship, I was like, this guy isn't pushing my buttons. He's not crossing my boundaries. Yeah. He respects my boundaries. And that's when I went, oh, that's a friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a big eye-opening experience for me.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. It's a weird life, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I had a point. I completely forgot what I was
sorry, Timmy. Like, I just kept going with my point.
Right.
Do you want to keep going? We're at an hour and seven. Anything else you wanted to bring up or... I think it's been pretty good. I've liked it.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed the episode for sure. I'm just trying to remember if I can remember my point, but like it's completely
can't have been that important, mate. Sorry to break it to you.
Last time we did, I want to touch on this because this was a bit interesting. We did touch a bit on the beliefs episode.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
and that you were saying that you found the what we were talking about in beliefs, like, you know, especially the
you agreed topic with on, some bits, but you didn't agree with others.
Yeah, religion and atheism and things like that. Do you have any input on that? Do you remember? Or?
Yeah, I remember bits and pieces. It was a bit more fresh in my mind a week ago. But yeah, obviously. I think if I could condense my point down, it would be, you know, while I'm not religious, I guess I do come from a religious family. My grandpa's a priest, for example. Oh, so I've always been around religion and was exposed to it young and have seen that, because I think a lot of people fall into the trap of, especially if you're brought up to not be religious.
Yeah, were you brought up Christian or?
I mean, kind of, like, you know, baptized and all that sort of stuff. Went to church, you know, when I was young, but then neither of my parents practice, so we just stop going, and then you stop sort of thinking about it. I think a lot of people who aren't brought up around religion, I guess their only exposure to it is the crazies on either side, right? So you think, because those are the only people you find, are the people preaching.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to sort of say religion is bad, blah, 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 blah. So my view is, I actually think religion is quite good for a lot of people. The point I was making, which is blatantly stolen off Friendly Geordie's podcast, maybe it was an interview he did. One way or another, he made some interesting points talking about a lot of people just sort of in a sort of like happiness mind state kind of way. If you sort of like aren't thinking that the universe is crazy, you could die at any second, when you start to just sort of let go of some of those existential things and think there's someone out there looking out for me, I'm going to succeed, I'm going to do this, I think it
put you in a good mindset.
It can be good. And I think that's another thing Geordie brought up, was that sort of reflected a lot of happiness index. Christians have lower suicide rates. On average, they're a lot happier. I think what I wanted to do was sort of balance the story that you guys had, which is, you know, neither of us religious, we all think it's dumb, blah, 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 blah. And
I never said that.
But yeah.
Well, I think anyone who's religious would probably have walked away with that interpretation, regardless of what you guys actually feel.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wanted to balance it a little bit and say, while I'm not religious, I do actually think it can be beneficial. Not to everyone. I don't think we all should suddenly just go to church, but... Yeah. I want to just balance it out and say,
I want to comment on that. I think there's aspects of religion that are definitely positive, for sure. And I think that's the main thing, is obviously community, network, like positivity.
Yeah,
all
definitely.
Those come any sort of society where you have that network or you have that community to rely on, you're going to be in a better position, for sure. I suppose the things that I don't like about religion is when, because of religion, you're denying facts. Because of your religion. That's when I come in and I'm just like, all right, well, what the fuck's going on here? It's just like, because your religion, you don't believe that the world is billions of years old, even though it's been proven. You know what I mean? Like, that to me shows the brainwashing element of religion, where you're so indoctrinated into your belief system because of obviously how you've been brought up, that you're willing to say no to scientific facts. That's the point where I think is it's detrimental to society, because it's one, it's pulling you back, and it's creating divisions between people. Obviously the people that believe in science and the people that don't believe in science. And that's the aspects that I don't agree
with. It's a hard one. I do think you've got to take some mental liberties to maintain being religious.
Yeah.
Something that was interesting for me. I remember I would have been under 10, like 8 or 9. I remember asking my grandpa, the priest, flat out, do you believe in God? And I remember him saying, it's not whether I believe in God. It's not whether I think that he exists or whether he does exist. It's whether the teachings are good, whether doing this makes me a better person, and the lessons are, you know, am I a better person? Do I feel more of a desire to be better? And it was, you know, this is me paraphrasing that conversation that happened over 20 years ago, but it was just fascinating to be like, I'm not here to debate whether it works. I just think that this is a good thing to believe, and I'm going to be a good person. And I think that, because, you know, as I was touching on originally, you only ever really interact with the super, super religious on the fringe. And I think that people sort of forget that, you know, probably 1 in 4 Australians is Christian, right? So you're interacting with these people who seem normal all the time, because they're not forcing it down their throat forcing it down your throat.
And those are the people that I respect. Exactly. I'm like 100%. Right. If you don't force down your opinions on down to me, definitely. Believe whatever
and
the
that,
fuck you please.
You gotta remember like, that is the majority. Yeah. And you can't base your opinion 100%. On something by the fringe.
Not at all. And sorry, just quickly. No, you go. Because I have a friend up in Sydney. He's super religious, but he's also very gay. Like, he is one of the gayest people I've ever met, but I love him to bits.
Like, how much gay?
Super gay.
Say no more.
12 gay?
He is also very religious. And I've had multiple conversations with him. I'm just like, I didn't understand. Because especially when we were going through the plebiscite and we're going through that voting stage, I was just like, I don't understand. Like, tell me what your experience has been like within your church when you came out. And he's just like, the first people I came out to was my church people, and they were the most supportive people. And I as soon as they said that, I was just like, well, you're in a good position then. I'm like, it's the things that you hear, especially on the fringe, like on the cusps of like homophobia, all these negative attributes, and usually they're attributed to religion or it's a group of Christianities, but it's really the 1% of that group that obviously put those things out there. But it also puts a whole detrimented sort of black spot on the whole teachings of religion, because I mean, those kind of thoughts come from like the fundamentals of religion. I mean, I'm not saying that all religious people believe that gays are the devil and stuff like that, but I mean, at the core from that belief, it comes from their religion, you know what I mean? So like, everyone that is religious can believe that, if that makes sense. But at the same time, if you're not religious, you can also be a homophobic prick too, so.
Yep.
To me, I agree with what you're saying. Like, there's a lot of good things about community, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of, you know, support. You can feel in touch with God. It makes you feel looked after and cared for. When it comes down to it for me is I don't need it, and mm-hmm. I don't think anyone needs it. Obviously, when you're brought up that way, I think people do come to need it, but I don't think you do need it.
A lot of people turn to religion too when they're going through a dark position.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the people in prison and stuff, when they want to make a change in their life, they go through religion. And I think that's just because that's the creation of the steps within religion to get to that enlightenment sort of thing.
But when it, as Tim was saying, when it comes to finding out what's true or finding out what, you know, how much basis or how much knowledge this can bring about the world, I feel like there's a lot of areas of that, especially when they try to legislate it. When, mm-hmm. you know, unfortunately in a lot of Islamic countries, a lot of the legislation is rooted in religion, mm-hmm. and they base all their laws off that. And I think that's really, really bad. I think that can lead to a lot of bad things. And, you know, and especially some states in America are trying to push creation as fact in schools to kids, which I think is horrible.
And obviously the fact that they've like basically made abortions like illegal in Texas and stuff too. It's just like, I mean, they come that
I'm not sure if that religion. I'm not sure if it actually does though. I'm not sure if that's actually a religious thing, if that was in the Bible. I think that maybe just something that came up as religion, as like, oh, we've got to cherish life and all this stuff.
I mean, I think the people pushing for that kind of law to be pushed are religious, for sure. Yeah.
On average, for sure. Yeah, at least. There'd definitely be non-religious pro-life people.
Yeah, 100%. But I think the ones that are fighting for it would be most likely
with the homosexuality thing. We can touch this as the last thing here.
Yeah, I'm happy to keep going.
With the homosexuality thing, obviously, we've got you know, your friend, and he's still religious, and he's in a community that accept him for being gay, and then there's probably other gay people in his church and all this thing mm-hmm. stuff. But then, obviously, in the Bible, it says you can't be gay. Yeah. You are will go to hell. You're an abomination. And then it's like, so when I see things like that, I'm happy that he's found that community and he's able to still practice his religion and have people that accept him for him. But then he's just ignoring a part that of
his... Well, that's the thing. That's in the Old Testament, not the New Testament. So that's...
I mean, what difference does it make? Was God wrong in the Old Testament?
Well, they've changed it for different beliefs. That's what I'm saying.
But the whole point is God is all-knowing, all-seeing. He knows everything. So why did they need to change what he said?
But don't forget, this is...
Because it's written by man.
And I'm not the person to really be doing this, because I think you need to understand the nitty-gritty to be able to argue this. But the whole point of the Bible is it's... as Tim said, it's man's interpretation, that each particular prophet or each particular person who wrote the book, it's their interpretation. So
of God's
there sin. there are a lot of Christians who will say this guy was right, that guy was wrong, and this is, I'm sure I'm missing something here, but the whole point is it's
inspired. It's the word of God. It's inspired by God. That, I'm not trying to argue anything here. Mm. I'm just saying when I look at that and I see that's an abomination, but people still accept it. I'm like, well, why did God say that? Oh, it's an old now, New Testament. I'm like,
as I said, so I'm not
why
the
was God ever saying
this,
that ever?
But my understanding is the whole anti-gay thing stemmed from one single verse where it's like, you should not lie with another man, yeah. Which I want to say is, you know, pretty, there might be some other references as well, but yeah. People can say, oh, well, we just interpreted it wrong all this time. Maybe it means you know, lying with another man means you're committing adultery, you know, like there's other, because, you know, everyone's implied to be married, yeah, at this point, you know, like there's ways that you can interpret all these things. And
what about this? What about the slavery stuff?
I could be, as I said, I'm not
touching that with
you, Paul, dude. Yeah. I know nothing about that. Yeah. So yeah. I think you're gonna have some sort of like.
I'm trying to make is when I see it, I see there's a lot of bad stuff that people ignore because it's evil, and that's fine, and I'm happy that they're ignoring that. But I'm just like, it makes me realize. Well, they can just choose whatever they want from the Bible and just believe that. So I don't feel like it's really a substantial thing to believe. Just
what's
my
hard.
Point of view.
What's hard about it, though, it was like the Bible is one of the oldest books in the world, and it was written in a time where, unfortunately, a lot of people believed the same things that the Bible said. Like everyone believed that, the black people were supposed to be slaves. Like everyone believed that homosexuals were the devil. You know what I mean? Like. It's written by man, even though it's obviously supposed to be faith. Like, man has to put their bias at the time into the book. And that's the basic reason why I don't really like the Bible, is because I'm like, it's written by man. Even if you don't even take into account faith, it's just like people are putting their opinions in this book. It's impossible to write without any kind of like agenda or like structure, yeah. You know what I mean? It's really hard. So anyway, I think that's a good point to leave it. let's leave it there because I know Matt needs to bounce.
Yeah,
but
he needs
to skadoosh. Need to make sure that
I need to go do successful person things.
Need to go make sure this can be saved this time. I swear to God, if this doesn't get saved, I'm going to fucking flip my
guys, fingers crossed. Thank you so much for sticking to 30 episodes of our bullshit.
What a wonderful season.
Season one. Yeah,
fun season. We're going to be... couple months off, like we're gonna figure out what we want to do for season two, and then we'll be back at it. And I'm sure keep an eye on our socials because we'll give you some lead up time when we're gonna come back with the next couple of episodes.
And yeah, if you've stuck by, we love you.
Love you guys.
Send us your feedback, whatever. This is Shuey. This is Tim. I'm Zariel.
Signing off. Stay average. And love you guys. Bye bye.
All right, that's the show for this week, guys. I don't know about you, Zar, but I feel much smarter with that advice.
Big brain energy over here, mate.
We release a new episode every Thursday, so please subscribe if you enjoy the show. But to keep up to date with us throughout the week, follow us at Instagram at Average Advice Official or Facebook, facebook.com/AverageAdvice.
Yeah, and if you have any of your own stories that you want to share regarding the topic we've just spoken about, or if you have a suggestion for a new episode, please send us an email at podcast@averageadvice.com.au. But that's us for this week, guys. We're Average Advice. Remember,
stay average.
See you.